Now, I want to speak to Alan Chambers, who's a UUP MLA for North Down. Alan, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Alan, you took the opportunity to write in the Belfast Telegraph recently about your memory of being in the RUC reserve.
Yes.
And you were using this opportunity to ensure that people never succeed in besmirching, in your words, the good name of the brave RUC men and women who you had the privilege of serving alongside. Well, why did you decide to write this, Alan?
Well, Frank, the article, first and foremost, it really wasn't, it's not about me. I was only a very, very small cog and a very large wheel, but was very proud of the part that I played in serving in the RUC reserve. But recently I have met, I'm at that age now where fortunately you find yourself attending a lot of funerals of friends and former colleagues. And just recently I've spoken with some old colleagues that I hadn't seen for some time. And the talk came around to, you know, all that's going on at the moment, all these inquiries and stuff. And these guys were very, very genuinely saying to me that they felt let down. They felt that their side of the story wasn't been put, and that you know, one officer in particular said to me that he was now almost ashamed to tell his friends or to tell anyone what his former employment was, not because of anything that he had been involved in or anything that he had seen, but just simply because of a lot of the sort of the dark publicity about the RUC. And you know, I felt, you know, I have a voice here. I'm in a privileged position of being an MLA, and I have a voice. And I just decided to write this article. It wasn't written, Frank, to score points or to be political or to annoy anyone. It was simply to try and put into context the sacrifices, the personal sacrifices that ordinary policemen and policewomen had to make, you know, to serve in the force.
You talk in the article about even the pressure on marriages, the difficulty in bringing up children, the fear in the community where you were living, that constant threat. That psychological pressure must have been very difficult.
Yeah, well, if you were a Catholic officer, Frank, and your parental home was in what would be maybe a predominantly a nationalist area, you had big challenges in terms of visiting your parents. In fact, you'd probably be advised, you would have been advised by the authorities not to go into certain areas. So if you had a family event, all the things that the rest of us take for granted, a christening, a marriage, a funeral, a death, it was a big challenge for particularly for a Catholic officer to go to that event, knowing that some maybe a guy who he went to school with could be setting him up for assassination, or indeed could be the one pulling the trigger. So, you know, that was a huge challenge. Other things like, I recall that if you were attending a consultant's appointment in the Royal Victoria Hospital, that was in the times and you didn't have to wait too long for one. But if you had got an appointment to see a consultant in the Royal, you had to report to Springfield Road Police Station, leave your car there, and then be escorted over to the hospital in an armoured vehicle and be escorted throughout your time visiting that consultant. Those are the sort of things that were going on in the background that the public still probably aren't aware of, you know, but that was the life that these guys were having to lead.
And, of course, a significant number of officers lost their lives, were targeted, were shot on their doorstep, were shot while they were out on patrol. These effects on families continue, the hurt and the heartache.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I touched on the marital breakdowns. I was personally aware of quite a few among the colleagues that I was involved, Frank, in junior football, and I organised, formed a club that basically was called Bangor United. And basically it was serving police officers, because those guys had no other outlet for sport. They couldn't go and play for another junior team and be on their own. So they came together and we played our matches in a league in that was based in Bangor in the Ards Peninsula, relatively safe. And at one time with four teams going, And that was the only sport. And we didn't train, and we got beat only 5-0 instead of 6-0. That was a victory for us. But it was an outlet for sport. But there's guys there that were dedicated to their GAA, guys who were really good players, could have went on to be county players, had to stop playing their sport simply because of the possibility of assassination. And that was a, that would have been a huge sacrifice for somebody who loved their Gaelic sport to have to do that.
Yeah, I went to school with a friend of mine for primary school and secondary school, one of the finest young up-and-coming Gaelic footballers, a gentleman called Sean McNulty, who played in 1978 for Down, who won the All-Ireland minor title. He then joined the RUC and he was never able to play Gaelic football again. Thankfully, that rule changed, but Sean had retired from any possibility of playing Gaelic football by the time the rule changed. But I used to talk to him about that, and you know, he missed out on success with the county at senior level because, number one, at that time he wouldn't have been allowed to play Gaelic football, and number two, it would have been much too great a risk for him to go to training and to go to matches as a serving member of the RUC, and many's a conversation I had with him about it. Having said all of that, and I went to school with other fellows who joined the RUC as well. I went to a school where I had many experiences. I went to a school where Raymond McCreesh, the hunger striker, was also at the school. So when you're in an environment where you've lads who grew up to join the police and other lads who are already maybe in the Provost or are about to join the Provost, you come from a community that sees things in different ways. And I'm sure there are many people listening to our conversation now, Alan, who've had the RUC come to the door, who've been on maybe a protest on the likes of the Ormo Bridge and have had the RUC there with the batons, or have been out on a civil rights demonstration and have had the RUC charge at them. That's how they see the RUC. So what do you say to those people?
I understand that, Frank, and my article wasn't designed to, you know, to antagonise those people. And I referred to the fact in my article that there were bad apples. I acknowledge that there were bad apples, and if anybody did do any wrong in the police, I would have been the first one to stand up and make a statement against them. If I saw anything that anybody did was wrong, I would have stood up, and so would have a lot of other officers. And if guys in the police did wrong, if they were guilty of harassing people with batons or whatever, then they should be held accountable. And people, if people have stories to tell and have evidence to put forward, then they should still come forward. And anybody who has broken the law should be held accountable. So I'm not trying to whitewash the police for this article. I wouldn't have that ability to do that. I don't know enough about all that went on in the big picture. I was simply trying to put into context the human cost, what it meant to be a police officer, the sacrifices you had to make for your family and your family life and everything else. Not being able to spend the time with your children growing up that maybe the rest of the community were able to do. And it was really in that context. But as I say, I understand fully, and I condemn anything any police officer that did that was breaking the law. I totally and utterly condemn it.
But was it
should be punished.
Yeah, but you're describing individual officers as maybe ones that were wielding the baton or ones that were kicking down your door. But there was a time when that was policy, surely, in certain areas of Belfast and certain areas of Ulster. That was the policy to keep the Catholics down, to keep the nationalists down. Adrian Dunbar, who stars in Line of Duty, who's one of our most respected actors, last year in an interview, he said he saw, as he was growing up, he went on to play a police officer in Line of Duty, he said he saw the RUC as a child as being a sectarian and oppressive force. And I'm quoting from him as opposed to quoting from a politician, because politicians very often have their own agenda. And there used to be a slogan when I was growing up, the RUC 90% Protestant, 100% Unionist. And as a result of that, Catholics and Nationalists felt that they couldn't trust the RUC.
Yes, I can understand all that, Frank. But my article basically was to talk about the personal cost of being a police officer, the difficulty of being a police officer, you know, but nobody seems to have come forward to speak for them. How many Adrian DeBars are out there who are prepared to stand up and say, you know what, if it hadn't been for the RUC, there would be a lot more people would be in their graves. You know, nobody seems to be coming forward and saying, even from, you know, within unions, politicians, I think that a lot of the ex-RUC personnel do feel a wee bit let down by their politicians, that it all seems to be criticism towards them and finger-pointing about all the bad things they've done. But nobody ever, Frank, ever steps forward and say, you know what, these guys did save lives. These guys did keep two communities apart that wanted to tear one another asunder. Nobody seems to be putting that case, but that is the reality. Where would Northern Ireland have been if there hadn't been the RUC in the 70s and the 80s? Where would we have been? And I don't think we would have been in a very, very good place, and there would be a lot more people lying in the cemeteries of Northern Ireland as a result.
Having said that, Alan, and I understand totally where you're coming from as a serving officer who was giving your time for the betterment of society, and there were thousands of officers like that in the RUC, and let's not make this sound like as if this is me almost putting a Republican perspective just to take on a unionist perspective of Alan Chambers. Yes. This is me as a member of society talking to Alan Chambers as a former RUC man, as opposed to having some sort of political debate about it and me having to take some other side because the Republican perspective isn't here on the programme this morning. I'm talking about how we generally remember the RUC and how people remember them, and you feel that their memory is being besmirched to some extent. I'm quite sure even the least generous of people would say that there were really decent people in the RUC. But is part of the problem not the fact that you had within the force the likes of Special Branch, who besmirched the name of the RUC more than anyone else when you look back?
Well, Frank, you see, I'm as I've told you at the start of the interview, I'm not qualified to talk about what the Special Branch did or what they didn't do, and history maybe will judge that. So I wouldn't be an expert in that, and nor could I, you know, even start to defend anything that was indefensible. The thrust of my article was purely to put into context what these guys had to put up with when they pulled on a uniform in the morning and went into their work and didn't know if at the end of the day they were going to come home alive. That's the context in which I wrote the article. Not about, about what people say they did or the doors they kicked down or the people they battened. As I say, that's another story. The thrust of my article was simply to put into context that there were an awful lot of very, very good people, very brave people, who stepped out there to protect the community and to give us some quality of life during the Troubles. And that's all I was trying to do.
Other people observing will say that they got very well paid for what they did. It was a job. I couldn't have done it. You know, I admit I couldn't. I wouldn't have had the courage to police Northern Ireland in the 60s, 70s and 80s. Full stop, would not have had the courage to do it. Now, people did have the courage. Some abused that power they were given. Some stuck to the absolute letter of the law and were a credit to their uniform. Others were just simply brave, and without them, we couldn't have got to where we are today. All of that has to be factored into an analysis of the RUC. But people will say that, you know, come Patton and come retirement, that they're now living a life, the retired officers, of great comfort.
I'm not so sure about that, Frank. There's still a lot of officers who are still worried about their personal safety, who don't want to talk about being in the job for the simple reason that they feel they could still be a target, and that may well be the case. And, you know, and people used to talk about the overtime that the police officers got, and yes, they did. They got overtime. But overtime's not an amount of money that appears in your pay packet at the end of the month just as a thank you. It has to be earned. Overtime is you had to punch in the hours to be paid. You could argue about it was very well paid or whatever, but you still, every hour of overtime that you did was another hour that you were away from your family. It was another hour that you were out there facing the possibility of a sniper's rifle or whatever. So, you know, it wasn't a gift. Overtime wasn't a gift. And the wages that those guys earned, as I say, weren't a gift. It had to be earned. And, I mean, it's acknowledged that the RUC was the most dangerous police force in the world to serve in. You know, and I think, as you said earlier yourself, you wouldn't have done it yourself. But, you know, there were people who went out there every morning and didn't know whether there was going to be a bomb onto their car, didn't know what was going to happen to them while they were on duty. They had to live with that. But more importantly, their kids, their wives, their families, all had to live with that as well.
Yes, and of course you lost colleagues as well, and that that always has to be factored in. I remember during the 70s, every morning seeing an RUC officer drive past me at my bus stop, and it was a lonely country road bus stop. There were only a couple of us at it, and I used to nod to him every morning. And that was the route he took every single day, and that was to lead, indeed, to his life being lost, because when he took that route every day to work, he took another route every day, predictably, home, and he always stopped at a set of traffic lights, and the IRA killed him at a set of traffic lights on one wet, cold winter's evening. And I can still see that chap's face, nodding, smiling, saying hello, and he was based at an RUC station not far from where I lived. And you will have known people like that. You will have known people like that who were shot dead, who were out trying to help the community.
Yes, well, certainly with having run the football team, Frank, I told you about, we put a lot of officers through our hands, obviously, and I came to know a lot of guys, and certainly, and there would be two or three officers that I knew really, really well that were killed or assassinated, shot or blew up. And it does, you know, you still think about those people. There was over 319, I think it was, police officers were killed. And they all had families, and there's still families that grieve about them and everything else. So, the whole thing, you know, the more you talk about Northern Ireland, the whole thing, everybody suffered. Everybody suffered during the Troubles. It was a tragedy that Northern Ireland descended into what it descended into. And the police and people who served in the police and their families were victims as well. We were all victims of what went on during the Troubles. And that's something that none of us should ever be proud of, the fact that that we did, that we were part of the Troubles in a sense during the 70s, the 80s and the 90s.
It's very interesting commentary and an interesting article. Alan, thanks for coming on and explaining it to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Bye-bye.
That's Alan Chambers of the Ulster Unionist Party, feeling that the memory of the brave who served in the RUC, the men and women having their general memory besmirched by people who only see the wrong within the RUC. Your opinions are very welcome. 90 333 105. Quite a few of you remarking on the interview there about the RUC. Phil reminding us that sadly a number of people who've been in the RUC were affected by what they'd been through and suffered from mental illness, and some died by suicide. This one says, keep telling yourself whatever you're telling yourself about the RUC, Frank. We have no doubt what side your bread's buttered on. This one says, Frank, it's not that your caller isn't qualified to speak about Special Branch. He has no case to defend them. Murdered and indirectly murdered hundreds, says Paddy on Cave Hill. And this one says, the people who joined the RUC got a free house for joining up. This one says, I've seen a picture of the RUC in the Ulster Museum, and there was something like 60 officers down the years, who another person making reference about dying by suicide. A brilliant interview with the unionist politician, Frank, says Susan from Antrim. And this one says, very balanced, Frank. Fair play for covering the topic properly. It's an interesting text. We don't often get one like that. That's from John listening to the programme. Let me speak to a gentleman who's on line one. Good morning.
Morning, Frank.
Yes, you were listening to the interview about the memory of the RUC.
Yeah, my father joined the RUC in 1958, and I was born in 1962, and I lived through horrific times. So many friends lost, and my father and different things, injuries, and being intimidated at homes and stuff. I think they get it's very hurtful what things are said about the police from my point of view. They went out every day to protect life, unlike the terrorists, and they went out every day to take life. Now, unfortunately, a few rotten eggs dead let the side down, there's no doubt about that. But the majority of them are decent men, and I know quite a few of them are in their graves early. And I feel very aggrieved that people see the negativity about them all the time. And also what people maybe aren't aware of, in 1958 my dad joined the police. You maybe worked 70, 80 hours a week, and you paid for 40. It was only in the mid-70s, early 70s, I think, overtime came in. Most police officers could have worked 60, 70 hours a week and were paid for 40. So it wasn't always a bed of roses.
I have no doubt that you will have a fond memory of what your dad did. Totally understandable. And no one could argue about decent people being in the police. It's just an argument that you couldn't win. If you said there were no decent people in the police, you couldn't win that argument. The police is peppered with decent people. But you also have the imagery of the baton-wielding police, the police kicking down the doors, the police firing the rubber bullets at close range to people during demonstrations. The police, of course, with collusion. The police's name has been besmirched by the activities of the police down the years. There's no getting away from that.
There is no getting away from it, Frank, but a lot of riotous situations, the police were hopelessly outnumbered. My father, I remember, telling me, terrified in them situations. Nobody would have been looking for glory. I mean, you were terrified, literally terrified in them situations. There's no... On many occasions, you're standing there with a shield and a stick, and people are firing petrol bombs and bricks at you. Police weren't firing them back.
Yeah, but there have been examples in the early stages of the civil rights, when civil rights protesters close to Derry were on the march and they were attacked by the loyalists.
That was 100% wrong, and my father would condemn that too. That's 100% wrong.
Yeah, and the police basically joined in to beat the Catholics.
Yeah. Absolutely. As my father said, when he joined the police in 1958, he joined the police to direct the traffic in Belfast, not to fight the IRA. So that's the way he looks at it, and I'm very proud of my father, and lucky enough he's still here today.
Yeah, and so you should be. Let's emphasise this. Yeah. So you should be very proud of your father. And this is important to point out, because your father, I'm sure, is able to tell you many stories of a contribution he made to society where he helped people and maybe saved lives.
Absolutely. Many the time he did. And he has medals to prove it. And he's, as I've said earlier in the programme, in many cases, I think my father does look back and thinks of it. And the days to come and has said to me, you're probably ashamed they ever mentioned us in RUC. And I said, I'll never see that day. Never.
So you get a sense that more and more officers do feel that the erosion of the
name of the RUC.
I think
it's a conception in this country that the police force started the trouble, which is... It's far from the case. And not a country in the world didn't have a police force. And in most countries, police forces aren't particularly like, because they are trying to uphold the rule of law and order. The police force here, the army were quite fortunate in many degrees, went home to live in barracks. What's forgotten is that the police went home and lived in local communities and were open to attack 24-7. And I know that. My father slept in the hall many a night with his gun. When we grew up, I had cars of our own. I was going to regard you were 17 when you got a car, and my father, if I was going to work first, would have made sure I checked underneath that car. And he used to laugh about it, but it wasn't funny because people were really up like that. That was a ritual every morning with a mirror and a stick, checking your car before I went to work as a 17-year-old teenager, in case somebody put a bomb under a car at our house. It was some way to live, I can tell you.
Knocks on the door must have been difficult.
Very difficult. Somebody killed, you heard that on the radio, a police officer killed her. It was horrific times. I would get quite emotional about it. There were times that, and I know hundreds of people lived that life, and it was not a bed of roses, I can tell you. And many someone did get that knock, and many's a friend of my father's, and they were family friends of ours. And as I say, most of those men went out to do good every day. They weren't going out to, their main aim wasn't to go out and kill and blow people up.
Did your father feel more at threat or under threat when he was in the Land Rover, or did he feel more at threat when he was under threat when he was sitting in his front room?
I would say my father retired when he could have worked till he was 62, 61 and a half he retired from the police, and after about a year it took him to settle down. He said, I didn't realise the pressure I was under 24/7. And an unfortunate thing happened 8 or 9 months into retirement. There was a threat come on him, and he had to move house. They were still after him then. Yeah, and he was advised to move house, which he had to do. Him and Mum in their mid-60s, thinking that was behind him. And that's what happened then too. and it was taken that serious that they had to move out.
Yeah, it's a tough way to lead your life. It absolutely is when you hear it described as from the mouth of a child, the grown child of an RUC officer. Yeah. Listen, thanks for the call. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.